This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Killer Mike's new CD is called Rap Music. It's the Grammy winner's sixth studio album and his first with William Street Records. That's an Atlanta-based label that produces music projects for the Cartoon Network's Adult Swim program. And that means that Mike's label mates include a family of redneck squids, a talking meatball, and an omnipotent death metal band. All of which may sound silly to you, but Mike and his label are serious about taking music to the next level of creativity. Rap Music has already been called a hip-hop masterpiece by one critic, and others have praised the production along with Mike's socially conscious lyrics. Killer Mike's going to be in Raleigh this weekend for the third annual Hopscotch Music Festival, and I'm very happy to welcome him to our show as our guest today. Mike, welcome to the State of Things.
Thanks for having me, Frank. I appreciate you.
And we should talk about this, the title of this album, Rap Music. You had, it's R period, A period, P period. So we all know rap music is rap music, but it has a special meaning for you. Tell us about that.
Yeah, about a year ago, a cultural critic and writer and just an all-around, just a one good guy. He's a young intellectual in Atlanta. His name is Maurice Garland, and as he grows within writing and, you know, the things that intellectuals do, I'm sure you guys will get to know him well. He put randomly on Twitter, rap music is supposed to be rebellious African people. And I immediately hit him and said, I'm using that, delete that tweet. I said, I'm going to name my next album that.
Go ahead.
What I take that or interpret that to mean is that, you know, since we as African Americans have been brought here, pretty much the only thing that's been able to gain liberation and resist oppression and, you know, give you the whole story since we weren't allowed to read and write in the beginning was voice. And I believe that rap music, although it's been shunned as not a real music by some of the people we look up to the most, I think that our first instrument in this country has been our voice. And I think whether it was wailing through cotton fields and tobacco fields in the Southeast, or learning to pluck strings on a banjo and create rock and roll and blues and things of that nature, I think that all this music that has been created on this soil is rap music. And just the act of being happy under oppression was freedom for people who were enslaved. And right now, rap music seems to be the only voice for the disenfranchised and the people who are not thought about as much. So I think it's a grand... piece in a long history of great music.
Did you start thinking about this? I mean, had you been thinking about it for a while, or did the tweet trigger the thought?
Now, I've always felt that way internally, but sometimes, you know, the creator or whatever's out there just gives you good friends who say things that make it all congeal for you, and it did. I've grown up with rap. I grew up at a time where federal programs were coming out of public schools for the arts. I grew up at a time where instruments were not readily available to kids in inner city schools. So I grew up pretty much with rap music. And because instruments and classical musical training were gone, these kids that grew up in these cities, including myself, had to learn to use technology. We learned to pause tapes to make instrumentals. We learned to use beat machines to do more than thought they'd be used for. We learned to take old synths from the 60s. And make new and interesting sounds. So, you know, for me, I always thought that rap should be included in the musical legacy of, you know, that we've had in this country. And it just brought all that together, how that's what it is. That's what the voice is. That's what the music is. So it just brought fruition to the thought, and I appreciate him for that.
Well, the title track is an homage of sorts to your musical predecessors, but you're not just talking about hip-hop. I want to listen to a couple verses from the song Rap Music right now.
Jazz, this is funk, this is soul, this is gospel, this is sanctified sick, this is clear Pentecostal, this is church, barbecue, amen, poor people, what my people need, and the opposite of bullshit. Yeah, Robert Johnson, that Muddy Waters, that James Brown, Augusta Georgia, that Ray Charles, that Stevie Wonder, that Mayfield, that Superfly, that Willie Hutch, and that Mac, this that blues man, that soul man, that outcast, that southern player, listed Cadillac, this that Jimi Hendrix, that George Clinton, I feel it in my bones. Franklin, that Shirley Caesar, missing us a mole. That Sade, that loves King, that Coltrane, that loves Green, that Miles Davis, bitch, screw that. Yeah, I said, I play what this is, jazz.
Rap Music, the title track from Killer Mike's newest LP, and he is going to be at Hopscotch this weekend on the phone with me now talking about that new album. Obviously, you see music, or let me ask you if you see music as a kind of spiritual tool as well.
Yeah, for me, you know, it really has been the closest I've felt. I remember reading a short story by Langston Hughes where he talked about his aunt that raised him, me and his cousin, just how she'd take them to church, and, you know, you couldn't leave church till you got the Holy Ghost. I can remember going to tent revivals with my grandmother and just seeing, you know, tent revivals in the South in the summer are hellacious, pun intended. So I can remember just being there like, please let another three people catch the spirit so we can leave, you know? And he talked about never feeling it and not being willing to fake it and just eventually just get so tired, just faked it. But I really feel like that, like the closest I've had to true religious experiences has been, for me, rap music, you know. And
so, well, it's a religious experience, and you talked about the power of this music from the start as the voice of people who are oppressed from the start.
Yeah.
And yet I've also seen you say that you don't like to be called a political rapper, but certainly the lyrics and your whole aesthetic, the way you approach the music, has a kind of a political bent, would you say?
Well, it's social. It's not political. I mean, it's going to get interpreted as political, and people are going to attach their own thoughts and agendas to it. And I feel at one point I may have been more politicized, but for me, it's just social. You know, that's why you get a Lord of the Flies reference, you know, a few songs above that, because it's a social study more than a political study. Like, people suffer under all regimes, capitalism and communism, Democrats and Republicans. Leave people unsatisfied. So it's not about that. It's about the social aesthetic. When I say I ain't got no instruments, but I got my hands and feet, I pull that directly from a Nina Simone inspiration, you know, just watching her on YouTube and just realizing the gravity. Like, before we have government, before we have family, before we have any of those orders and those rules, we just are these children with our hands and our feet and our cooing. And I just try to view people like that and deal with people like that, because I feel if I do that, then it's more about the love and less about the anger.
Well, go ahead.
A lot of time being angry and politicized. So for me, it's just social commentary based on love.
Well, your song Reagan is getting a lot of attention from the new album. Let's listen to a bit of that right now.
Ronald Reagan was an actor, not at all a factor. Just an employee of the country's real masters. Just like the Bushes, Clinton and Obama. Just another talking head telling lies on teleprompters. If you don't believe the theory, then argue with his logic. Why did Reagan and Obama both go after Gaddafi? We invading sovereign soil, going after oil. Taking countries is a hobby paid for by the oil lobby. Same as in Iraq and Afghanistan. And I'm a dinner jar, say they coming for Iran.
A little bit of Reagan from Rap Music by my guest Killer Mike's going to be at Hopscotch this weekend on the phone with me now. So when you say you're not political, you mean you're not taking sides on in terms of party politics, but as you say, it's a social issue for you and it's important. Why Reagan? I mean, if that's the case, you kind of could have picked any president, right? Or not?
Reagan? I did. I said just like the Bushes, Clinton and Obama.
How do you feel about that? If everybody's a kind of a spokesman, a front for some larger body of interest, which may or may not serve the interest of all of us, what's behind it, and are there answers?
I think everybody sees. I'm not a conspiracy theorist, and I think there are, you know, these dark dealings happening by masked men in a foreign room. Nah, but I definitely think that it's apparent that the businesses that we are customers of have too much influence in the governments that we vote in. Mm. You know, now, actually, I'll say it better. The businesses we are customers of have too close of a relationship to the politicians we're constituents of.
Yeah.
And that doesn't feel right to me.
How did you end up signing with William Street Records?
Well, they're one of the businesses that
there you go. And that's why we're their customers. Go ahead.
Yeah. And they just said, hey, we want you to make the record you always wanted you to make. We don't have any expectations. And it's very rare you get an opportunity to do that as an artist. And I'm certainly not anti-business or capitalist, any of those things, because I'm an art student, even before music. And I recognize that without rich patrons, we wouldn't have things like the Sistine Chapel and the Mona Lisa. And you wouldn't have had the greats because there were no rich people to make sure that they could just be artists. So I looked at it like finally a corporation that's outside of music but still in entertainment is saying, we want you to make the kind of record you wanted to make 9 years. I just took it as a great opportunity to do it because I didn't have to satisfy anybody's expectation of a radio single. I didn't have to satisfy anybody's expectation of first week sales. All I had to do was be a great independent artist, which I had spent 6 years developing into. So it made all the sense in the world for me.
And William Street is kind of famous for making music for that cartoon series on the Cartoon Network, Adult Swim.
Yeah, they are. They are.
And are you a big fan of animated TV?
I am, so much so I've done voiceover on a few of the shows. Aqua Teen Hunger Force, I played a cell phone. I did drops for the Boondocks. I was the voice of Taquil on Frisky Dingo. And it's something that I still do, and I'm looking for more opportunities.
We're actually going to hear you as Taquil now, just so that I can say Frisky Dingo on the radio. Let's listen.
Okay.
71% of Americans don't care at all about global warming, which is why I'm bringing in an urban relations advisor.
No! I don't want some affirmative act. Julie, that could really work out for us. How are you? Care for a grape soda?
I'm out.
Oh,
orange?
No, don't be out.
Fish,
be
maybe.
In.
He's a one-hit wonder. Global warming.
Cured it, bro.
His foreign policy is unrealistic.
Global
His
warming.
Domestic policy is non-existent.
Global warming.
Healthcare.
Global warming.
Immigration.
Global warming.
Welfare reform.
Global warming.
Man, do you even know what these terms mean?
I know that I cured global warming.
See?
So
he's a one-trick pony.
Well, it's a pretty big pony.
My God.
What?
So let's hear it.
Meet your new VP.
Who's that?
Taquil.
Oh, hell yeah.
The black guy.
Hey, thank you, Strom Thurmond.
No, I'm cool. You know, I'm down with it. But is America down? Are they ready for a black VP?
Hey.
I don't know.
Hey, man, look.
You know, you'd literally be a heartbeat away from the presidency.
Am I really hearing
and
it?
And that's, you know, I'll be honest, that scares the crap out of a lot of people.
Man, f*** you.
Don't. See, you're nothing but a hooligan.
Here we go. Killer Mike as Taquil on Frisky Dingo. When he's not making records, he's making voices for cartoons. So tell us about that show and your role in that.
That was the one where Killface was running for president and Taquil was his running mate. And you heard the nod to Strom Thurmond on there. I think I actually threw that line in, too, freestyle. I love doing animated shows because they give you the liberty to use the sarcasm of a Carlin or a Bruce, and it almost be looked at as child's play, so people, you know, don't come for your head the next day. But I think that was very good social commentary. I think that might have been even pre-Obama. So,
Great. Yeah, because we had a guy who was freaking out over the possibility of a black vice president, which
exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. So I love doing that, and I think that, to be honest, I think that amongst the corporate culture of just what's young and cool, I think William Street and Cartoon Network, Adult Swim and William Street, make some of just the best stuff out there. All of it isn't thought-provoking. Some of it is just funny for the sake of, but I really like their program, and it's something I was already a fan of.
I want to talk about another track on your new CD, because I know you were essentially raised by your grandparents, and you dedicated a song to your grandfather, and I want to listen to a little bit now of Willie Burke Sherwood.
Okay.
You all know how the story goes. Drop by the college and self-test. I figured I invest in studio time. Drop rhymes have success. But mostly I got funded on, stunted on. Nigga dealt with some stress.
But I take that two, take that three. My mama got to see me on TV. My grandmama got to get a Grammy. And my granddaddy got to see his boy eat. See his boy grow. I wish I never had this show. I wish you never had to go. Wish you could meet my wife. Wish you could see my life. But you had to see the light. Wish I had you one more day. Wish I had you tomorrow. That's your birthday. We could sip gin. We could straight get fade. We could ride on some stool tray.
Willie Burke Sherwood from Killer Mike's new CD, Rap Music. What do your grandparents make of your music career?
At first, man, they thought it was the worst idea ever. You got to understand, for a black kid to make it out of a working class neighborhood and in Atlanta, Georgia, and go to Morehouse, and then say, "Yo, I'm going to quit school to become a musician." That's the most insane thing you could say to two people who came up. They were born in 1922 and 1932, so they lived through the Great Depression. You tell two older black people that, man, and they're going to go through the roof, and they did. They went insane, and then in between leaving college and having a career, I had children, which really drove them crazy. And just when I had got my life, what they thought would be settled, and I would be working and fathering and just taking care of my kids, I called them out of nowhere one day, like, I just decided to quit my job because I'm going to pursue music all the way full time. I didn't tell them at the time that I had a $35,000 check in my hand, and I had just signed a record deal, and it was all going to be okay. So they just were disgusted and hung up and literally wouldn't talk to me until I went over there and showed them the check, like, no, it's okay, it's finally happening. They looked me squarely in the eye and said, well, give us the money so we can put it up for our great-grandchildren.
Because once you get in that business, you're going to lose every penny of it.
Exactly.
Well, now, they might have been happy to know. Did they live long enough to see you start your business, your barber business?
No, my grandpa didn't. My grandpa died 9 years ago, but he did live to see me. He lived to see me accomplish it, to get out a record, for people to appreciate him, to get famous, go gold. He got to see all that. And my grandma died in my arms February 29th of this year. And the last thing we did together was go see, I took her to a soul food restaurant with her sister. We went to see the movie about the Tuskegee Airmen, Red Tails, because they were from Tuskegee, Alabama. And we went to visit my barbershop. And they... she was absolutely happy, and we did that on a Friday or Saturday, and that Monday we were walking to my youngest child's Black History program, and she had a heart attack, didn't make it all the way into my arms. So spent the last couple of days on Earth together, which was really, really cool.
Well, I'm sorry for your loss, but I'm happy to hear that story.
Yeah,
happy it ended that way. And the barbershop, why did you decide to open a barbershop?
Well, I mean, to be very frank, I don't honestly believe you can have a community if you don't own anything in the community. So I don't think black people really have communities. I think we almost have, we just have places we live or neighborhoods. But I remember a time in my life where the vendors and the merchants in my community, at least two of every five looked like me. So I grew up with a stronger sense of community. I grew up in a very famous community called the Collier Heights in Atlanta. And it's basically where, pre-desegregation, all blacks had to live together, the rich, the working class, the poor. So I grew up in the working class section right next to really rich black people, and I went to good schools because of that. But in my community, the people that owned my community, for the most part, looked like me. And that dissipated over the last 30-some-odd years. So it was important for me to, first of all, put a vendorship as a rapper in the community that's owned by someone that looks like the community. So that was important. I have a physical business, not just a record company you got to go downtown to visit, or not just a business interest in something that was corporate and really you don't get to see the face of it, but really a physical business where people could come in and see me if I'm in town. I also wanted a business where I could employ black men specifically, because national unemployment rates are 7%, 8%, 9%, and usually black men unemployment rates double that. So I needed to get in a business where I could hire black men, where black men could have a skill, and where they could have the services and be a service to other black men. Barbershops are hugely influential in our communities, whether it's politics. If you want black men to know about blood pressure and health care, that's where you put the information. So it was important that, because I'm a rapper, I'm already rapping to that base, that I do that. Now, that's not exclusively who we cut the hair of. That's not exclusively who the base is for. But those are the ground rules that I had for starting my business, that a physical business would be in the black community. It'd be a face for the black community. It would employ black people, and it seems to be working out.
Whether you need a shaver and a haircut or just love good music, Killer Mike is an influential force on the American music scene today. Mike, so good to talk with you.
Thank you. I looked you up on Wiki. I like your hair and beard. You should come to 3461 Roosevelt Highway. Come to Graffiti Swag Shop. Get shaved, washed, and groomed, and it's on me.
I appreciate that. That's great. I cut my own hair, don't you?
No, get out of here.
Come on, I do. I got myself a little flowy, and that's how it works. But if I'm in Atlanta, I'll get my first professional haircut in 40 years from you.
We're 10 minutes away from the airport, and if you need a ride, you're welcome to call me or management. We'll come get you.
I will do it. Killer Mike, thanks so much.
Thank you very much, Frank.
Killer Mike's latest CD, Rap Music. He is one of the many performers at this year's Hopscotch Festival in Raleigh this weekend. Event information at hopscotchmusicfest.com. Coming up, Chapel Hill Band, Some Army, plays live. Stay with us.